27. Electric Wind. As Jimmy turned homeward, the northern end of Rama seemed incredibly far away. Even the three giant stairways were barely visible, as a faint Y etched on the dome that closed the world. The band of the cylindrical sea was a wide and menacing barrier, waiting to swallow him, like Icarus, if his fragile wings should fail. But he had come all this way with no problems, and though he was feeling slightly tired, he now felt that he had nothing to worry about. He had not even touched his food or water, and had been too excited to rest. On the return journey, he would relax and take it easy. He was also cheered by the thought that the homeward trip could be 20 kilometers shorter than the outward one, for as long as he cleared the sea, he could make an emergency landing anywhere in the northern hemisphere. That would be a nuisance, because he would have a long walk, and much worse, would have to abandon Dragonfly, but it gave him a comforting safety margin. He was now gaining altitude, climbing back toward the central spike. Big Horn's tapering needle still stretched for a kilometer ahead of him, and sometimes he felt it was the axis on which this whole world turned. He had almost reached the tip of Big Horn when he became aware of a curious sensation, a feeling of foreboding, and, indeed, of physical as well as psychological discomfort, had come over him. He suddenly recalled, and this did nothing at all to help, a phrase he had once come across. Someone is walking over your grave. At first, he shrugged it off, and continued his steady pedaling. He certainly had no intention of reporting anything as tenuous as a vague malaise to Hub Control. But as it grew steadily worse, he was tempted to do so. It could not possibly be psychological. If it was, his mind was much more powerful than he realized, and he could, quite literally, feel his skin beginning to crawl. Now, seriously alarmed, he stopped in mid-air to consider the situation. What made it all the more peculiar was the fact that this depressed, heavy feeling was not completely novel. He had known it before, but could not remember where. He looked around him. Nothing had changed. The great spike of Big Horn was a few hundred meters above, with the other side of Rama spanning the sky beyond that. 8 kilometers below lay the complicated patchwork of the southern continent, full of wonders that no other man would ever see. In all the utterly alien, yet now familiar, landscape, he could find no cause for his discomfort. Something was tickling the back of his hand. For a moment he thought an insect had landed there, and brushed it away without looking. He had only half completed the swift motion when he realized what he was doing, and checked himself, feeling slightly foolish. Of course, no one had ever seen an insect in Rama. He lifted his hand and stared at it, mildly puzzled, because the tickling sensation was still there. It was then that he noticed that every individual hair was standing straight upright. All the way up his forearm it was the same, and so it was with his head when he checked with an exploring hand. So that was the trouble. He was in a tremendously powerful electric field. The oppressed, heavy sensation he had felt was that which sometimes precedes a thunderstorm on Earth. The sudden realization of his predicament brought Jimmy near to panic. Never before in his life had he been in real physical danger. Like all spacemen, he had known moments of frustration with bulky equipment, and times when, because of mistakes or inexperience, he had wrongly believed he was in a perilous situation. But none of these episodes had lasted more than a few minutes, and usually he was able to laugh at them almost at once. This time, there was no quick way out. He felt naked and alone in a suddenly hostile sky, surrounded by titanic forces that might discharge their furies at any moment. Dragonfly, already fragile enough, now seemed more insubstantial than the finest gossamer. The first detonation of the gathering storm would blast her to fragments. "Hub control," he said urgently. "There's a static charge building up around me. I think there's going to be a thunderstorm at any moment." He had barely finished speaking when there was a flicker of light behind him. By the time he had counted 10, the first crackling rumble arrived. 3 kilometers. That put it back around the little horns. He looked toward them and saw that every one of the 6 needles seemed to be on fire. Brush discharges, hundreds of meters long, were dancing from their points, as if they were giant lightning conductors. What was happening back there could take place on an even larger scale near the tapering spike of Bighorn. His best move would be to get as far as possible from this dangerous structure and to seek clear air. He started to pedal again, accelerating as swiftly as he could without putting too great a strain on Dragonfly. At the same time, he began to lose altitude. Even though this would mean entering the region of higher gravity, he was now prepared to take such a risk. 8 kilometers was much too far from the ground for his peace of mind. The ominous black spike of Bighorn was still free of visible discharges, but he did not doubt that tremendous potentials were building up there. From time to time the thunder reverberated behind him, rolling round and round the circumference of the world. It suddenly occurred to Jimmy that it was strange to have such a storm in a perfectly clear sky. Then he realized that this was not a meteorological phenomenon at all. In fact, it might be only a trivial leakage of energy from some hidden source deep in the southern cap of Rama. But why now? And, even more important, what next? He was well past the tip of Bighorn, and hoped that he would soon be beyond the range of any lightning discharges. But now he had another problem. The air was becoming turbulent, and he had difficulty controlling Dragonfly. A wind seemed to have sprung up from nowhere, and if conditions became much worse, the Skybike's fragile skeleton would be endangered. He pedaled grimly on, trying to smooth out the buffeting by variations in power and movements of his body. Because Dragonfly was almost an extension of himself, he was partly successful. But he did not like the faint creaks of protest that came from the main spar, or the way in which the wings twisted with every gust. And there was something else that worried him. A faint, rushing sound, steadily growing in strength, that seemed to come from the direction of Bighorn. It sounded like gas escaping from a valve under great pressure, and he wondered if it had anything to do with the turbulence he was battling. Whatever its cause, it gave him yet further grounds for disquiet. From time to time, he reported these phenomena, rather briefly and breathlessly, to Hub Control. No one there could give him any advice, or even suggest what might be happening. But it was reassuring to hear the voices of his friends, even though he was now beginning to fear that he would never see them again. The turbulence was still increasing. It felt almost as if he was entering a jet stream, which he had once done, in search of a record, while flying a high-altitude glider on Earth. But what could possibly create a jet stream inside Rama? He had asked himself the right question. As soon as he had formulated it, he knew the answer. The sound he had heard was the electric wind carrying away the tremendous ionization that must be building up around Bighorn. Charged air was spraying out along the axis of Rama, and more air was flowing into the low-pressure region behind. He looked back at that gigantic and now doubly threatening needle, trying to visualize the boundaries of the gale that was blowing from it. Perhaps the best tactic would be to fly by ear, getting as far as possible away from the ominous hissing. Rama spared him the necessity of choice. A sheet of flame burst out behind him, filling the sky. He had time to see it split into six ribbons of fire, stretching from the tip of Bighorn to each of the little horns. Then the concussion reached him.